From Amazon best-selling author and journalist Remzo W. Martinez comes a new novel asking you how far you're willing to go to succeed if it means losing yourself in the process. How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship follows operative Art Brown as he attempts to build a reputation in the blood sport of politics. But that's not all. The story also goes back in time to the civil rights era to show you how a progressive judge once endorsed by the NAACP went on to become one of history's greatest villains. A clash between House of Cards and Hunter S. Thompson, this book has enough comedy, romance, and twists, and turns, of course, to keep you hooked regardless of where you sit on the political aisle. How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship by Remzo W. Martinez is available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Click the link in the show notes to go ahead and get your copy of How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship by our good friend Remzo W. Martinez. And now, on to the show.
Brian Nichols, you're a great man with some great ideas, a great podcast.
Do you see why he's my favorite libertarian people?
Yes.
He's full of common sense and wisdom.
Brian Nichols here on The Brian Nichols Show.
Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show, your source for common sense politics on the We Are Libertarians Network.
Today I am joined by easily one of the best, Matt Kibbe. Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show.
Hey, Brian, it's good to be with you. By the way, let me take a step back and say I love what you're doing. I love the conversational style, and it's a combination of good fun and serious ideas. I love the fact that your show's doing what it does, and this is how we win the future.
The Brian Nichols Show is the fastest-growing liberty podcast that brings together people from all means of political thought as we seek to have meaningful conversations about the issues you care about.
There's so many things that we can do to make America freer and the world better and safer and more peaceful. Everybody has the responsibility of trying to help to do that. You know, what you're doing with your podcast is a perfect example of, you know, you're doing this as a labor of love and for the cause, and that is exactly what we have to have.
At The Brian Nichols Show, our goal is to leave the audience educated, enlightened, and informed. And now your host, Brian Nichols.
So I just realized that Christmas is like 2 weeks away. Not is it even less than that? Let's look here at the calendar. Carry the one, divide by four. Yeah, so it as of today, Christmas is in a week and a half, guys. Because today is Friday the 13th, but don't worry, we have good luck here at the show today. Because this is the Brian Nichols Show. Every Friday you guys get a great episode of the Brian Nichols Show. And of course, I am your humble host, Brian Nichols. And today, if you're a first-time listener, first and foremost, welcome. I'm glad to have you back. And for, of course, the longtime listeners, of course, you guys, you know the drill, right? You're in store for a great episode with, of course, a great guest. And today we're going to be discussing criminal justice reform with a good friend of mine, Connor Dragotis. Now, Connor comes on the show today. Now, we kind of discussed this earlier in the episode when I'm interviewing Connor. Connor and I actually met because I lead what's called America's Future Foundation, as I mentioned on the show before, here for the Philadelphia chapter, and I had Connor come down to speak in regards to his day job, where he works as the director of communications for an awesome law firm that does a lot of great work in helping union employees, trying to help them in terms of acting on their rights and knowing their rights when they're facing their union bosses. And for those of you who are like, oh, this sounds familiar, it is familiar because I actually interviewed the head of the organization, David Osborne, back a few months ago. So go ahead, swing back into the episodes if you want to go ahead and check out that appearance from David Osborne from the organization that Connor actually does his day job from. But today, Connor is going to be on the show representing himself and discussing a topic that's very passionate to him, like I mentioned before, in criminal justice reform. So as always, if you enjoy the episode, please be sure to share with your family and friends. But hey, you know what? Let's get on to the show. Connor Dragotis here on The Brian Nichols Show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. And today I wanted to have you on, Connor, because I wanted to focus on a topic I think doesn't really get discussed enough. And I think partly it's due to the fact that people don't really put as much focus on it because it's not something that they really think about too much. And that is criminal justice reform. So you work in the legal field. So I wanted to kind of get some of your research into that. Well, is that fair to say? Your research into the legal field?
Yeah, I think I'd want to be pretty clear that I'm not an attorney. I work as the director of communications for a law firm. And really what my job is to help tell our clients stories, which in this area is particularly important because some of the stories out there about criminal justice reform and the way people are treated in our judicial system are almost too crazy to be believed.
Yeah. And I was questioning because, so I've interacted with you during your day job. I'm having you speak at America's Future Foundation here in Philadelphia. So that's where my wires kind of get crossed. And I also had the CEO of your organization on my show back a few months ago at this point, which I'll be sure to include in the show notes with David Osborne. So what we want to, like I said, focus on today is criminal justice reform. But before we do, Connor, let's kind of like circle back a little bit and just do a brief introduction to who you are and kind of what was your liberty story and what got you so involved in not only focusing on what you're doing, currently in communications, but also focusing primarily today on criminal justice reform.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess my story is pretty straightforward. About 10 years ago, I was listening to the radio. I was an undergrad at Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania. And all of a sudden, this voice just caught my attention on the radio. It was a talk show. I can't even remember who the host was. But all of a sudden, they had a guest on who was just making a lot of sense. He was talking about respect for people, respect for society, just doing some of the right things. And all of a sudden, the host speaks up and he goes, "And thank you so much, Mr. Gary Johnson." And it was just this incredible moment where I realized, man, there's someone out there who I think I should learn a little bit more about. So like any good overenthusiastic undergrad, I went online. I found this guy's office halfway across the country and I called them and I said, "Hey, what do you think about paying to send Gary Johnson all the way across the country to speak at this small undergraduate liberal arts school? And by the way, we can't pay you, but we'd love to have you here. We'll take you out to dinner after." And someone in his office said, "You know what? Yes, we're going to do that." And they shipped him out across the country. He spoke at Lafayette. And I had the opportunity to have dinner with him and ask him questions and just sit down. And what that really sparked was the beginning of what has now been a 10-year journey, where I started as a passionate volunteer on campaigns. And now I feel very lucky. I work full time for liberty, whether that's in my professional life, my personal life. This is what I do. And as you could probably tell already, it's something I care about quite a bit.
You know, and I'm going to be honest with you, Connor, I'm not picking fun here, but I think you are quite literally the first person I've ever heard, not only on the Brian Nichols Show, but also in my personal life, who was brought to the Liberty Movement by Gary Johnson. And the fact that you're actually, you're sticking to the principles of liberty, that's really cool to see that you weren't brought in on like the whole socially liberal, fiscally conservative thing. Cause that kind of like pushed me to like a little way from Gary, but, regardless, I'm glad that he brought you here. So let's, turn that towards one of the topics that obviously is passionate to libertarians, and that is criminal justice reform. So, criminal justice reform has been one of those things that has been discussed, but never really acted upon, it seems, until just recently we had the First Step Act, which was passed by President Trump, which was really a stab to try and start to correct some of the ills of our criminal justice system. So let's kind of set the foundation. What is the whole push behind the criminal justice reform movement, and why is it so important for people to actually start paying attention to this movement and give it the attention it deserves?
For sure. I mean, obviously, criminal justice and the problems inherent in that system have been around and have been discussed for years and years and years. But right now, criminal justice reform is just an effort trying to fix these problems across a spectrum of different issues: plea deals, incarceration rates, probation. What it really comes down to at the end of the day, though, is trying to treat people fairly. I think Americans generally tend to like the rule of law, and that's obviously a huge blanket statement that I know many of libertarian listeners, oftentimes myself included, would disagree with. But by and large, we're working within a system right now where a rule of law is an important aspect of how we approach conflicts among people. But right now, criminal justice reform is so important because it's finally a bipartisan movement. And libertarians have been on the right side of this for years and years and years. But all of a sudden, the left and the right are both ready to have this conversation and try again to get back to treating people fairly in the courts, in the judicial system, in terms of how people are arrested, why people are arrested. We're ready to have that conversation and we're going to be able to move the ball forward.
So there's like two things that you said that really piqued my interest. Number one is you were discussing kind of the pragmatic reality that it's not that we're looking at these laws and saying we don't think that they're unjust. It's just that we can't just snap our fingers and magically make all this go away. So that's one thing I thought that was very interesting. But number two is, I think you touched upon an underlying theme that I've seen, is that, and that's pretty much that libertarians seem to be at the forefront of almost all the major issues that the Republicans and Democrats are now coming to consensus on. I mean, look no further than the you know, gay marriage. You look at the overall opinion towards the legalization of marijuana. And also, as we're discussing today, and as we witnessed back in 2018, the movement towards acknowledging that the criminal justice system is broken, but that there really does need to be a focused bipartisan, and I know everybody hates that word bipartisan, but truly a collective effort to address the issue and really focus on making a lot of these necessary reforms.
For sure. I mean, unfortunately, I'm here on this show because we have a problem, right? Almost every single American is a criminal, whether you know it or not. I mean, there are just so many laws. FreedomWorks actually wrote about this back in 2013. I mean, this has been a discussion for a while now, where in 2013, the House Overcriminalization Task Force actually instructed the Congressional Research Service to provide a complete accounting of all federal crimes. And what happened is the chairman of that committee responded that they, quote, lack the manpower and resources to accomplish this task. Because it's just too big. It's not that most Americans are immoral, but because our laws and our legal system are just too large.
So I already know your answer, and I already have my answer too, which is always so hard when you're a libertarian. Like, I acknowledge my biases, but at the same point in time, I try to ask, like, generally questions I know people are usually asking, especially if you're coming from a different perspective from the onset. So if you're conservative, you know, you're coming into this conversation with the understanding based on what you've really probably been taught your entire life is, you know, look at the people who are in jail. They're in jail for a reason, right? Like, they're disproportionately committing acts of either it's violence or fraud, or it, you know, just go down the list of why they should, or not why should, why they are in jail. Now, I think what we're trying to do is turn the topic of, well, should they be in jail? And I think, you know, when you look at the number of Americans who are in jail, I would say disproportionately, a majority of them are in jail because of committing some quote unquote drug offense, which usually is a non-violent offense. So I would say to start off, it seems like the most rational, logical first step, besides the, obviously the First Step Act, would be to acknowledge the failure of the war on drugs and say, listen, why are we doing this? I mean, we were putting people into jail for not harming anybody, for, you know, smoking a plant or what have you. This is insane. And not only is it putting Americans in literal cages for years at a time for a nonviolent act, but it's so extremely costly on the taxpayer, because now we're paying for keeping these nonviolent offenders in cages, and you know, with all that comes, you know, the supervision and the food and you know, the medical care, and it's like, what are we doing? Don't we realize how messed up this actually is?
I couldn't agree more. You know, the devil's in the details, and I think there's so much messaging that we receive. Felons are bad people. That's what we hear. Because right. when you're growing up, when you're a kid in the media, whatever it is, you know, you watch these movies and people who commit crimes are bad. You know, there's very clearly, a good guy in a white hat and a bad guy in a black hat, and they're duking it out. And the reality is that so much of our legal system doesn't account for the gray area. One of the best examples of this is what I'd call the plea deal problem, which is where people get forced into probation. And into these other very difficult systems that have many laws, many, many rules. And we can talk about that a little bit too. But I want to imagine if you were wrongly accused of robbing a store, for example, you know, you're arrested, you're picked up, maybe you were walking in the area where a crime happened and you're matched the description in some way. And, you know, you get into a situation where you're with a prosecutor, an attorney who's telling you, listen, you have a couple choices here. On one hand, you could take probation for a couple years. Mm. And of course, because you're innocent, you're a good guy and that'll be fine. You're going to be able to get through that. Or the other option is, because now you've been charged with a crime, you can shoulder all the legal costs You're going to go to court. It's going to cost you an arm and a leg. There's always the risk that you'll be found guilty. You know, when given a choice between those two things, a huge number of people are being forced into taking deals, which, you know, prosecutors are able to do, that end up hurting them, because systems like probation are incredibly problematic, and that it's very, very easy to break a rule or accidentally do something wrong, and all of a sudden you can be extended for years.
Isn't there a book, or I forget the book? It's like I think it's a crime a day. I think. Hopefully, I'm not
three crimes a day.
Yeah, is that what it is? And it's like how many felonies people commit per week or something like that. Like we are all doing quote unquote illegal things, and it's just because the laws are so overreaching that, you know, obviously we're not being called on the quote unquote illegal things that we're doing every single day, but there are people who are, you know, disproportionately targeted. And it's insane that we have a system like that where we acknowledge openly, like, this is a bad thing. And if it were to happen to us in our own lives, we acknowledge how upsetting it would be, not only to us, but to our immediate families. But we can't, and this is where I have trouble trying to figure out what the disconnect is how are other people missing it? Like the people who are in favor of, you know, continuing these failed policies, they acknowledge it would be, you know, a negative to them, and they would hate for it to happen to them, but it's fine for everybody else. Like where's that disconnect coming from?
Unfortunately, I think it's because we're at a point where, again, that media presence is so strong and that narrative is so ingrained in our minds. And I think what's going to end up changing over the course of time is as there are so many laws and more people are forced into these difficult situations where the law is coming down on them for ridiculous, sometimes quote crimes unquote, because felons lose so much. Felons lose their right to vote, their right to bear arms. They can lose the right to adopt children. They lose parental rights with their biological children. I mean, ability to travel, hold jobs, the ability to live in certain neighborhoods, serve on a jury, all gone, right? And some of these laws are one of the funniest examples that I found in my research on this topic was, you know, imagine losing your parental rights as a felon because you brought a cucumber out of the Carolinas.
Yeah, it's insane.
You can't take a cucumber out of the Carolinas. That's grown there. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. But I think to speak directly to your question, over the course of time, as more people are exposed to these bizarre situations, that is what has led to this moment in time where all of a sudden they realize, wait a second, no, I know a person who's my neighbor, my friend, my family member, who's been taken advantage of by this system. And now I'm invested. Now I understand what's going on. Because you're right. For me and you, I mean, this is an area that we choose to live in and something we choose to care about. But for the average American, you know, they're concerned about getting to work on time, avoiding traffic, putting food on the table for their kids. They might not have the time to think about these issues until they are confronted with them for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let's kind of make that more localized, right? So you and I were both in Pennsylvania, and correct me if I'm wrong, this has been a topic of discussion over in Harrisburg, which is the capital here of Pennsylvania. So would you want to kind of start setting the premise for what's going on what happened?
Yeah. Well, first, I think it's important to mention that there are organizations across the country that are helping to make change, right? Because this has become a bipartisan issue, you're going to see the ACLU partnering with Americans for Prosperity, right? I mean, these unique team ups to get this job done. To be honest, it's a mixed bag. In Pennsylvania, Americans for Prosperity has helped move the ball forward. And that's the organization that I'm most familiar with, only because they offer trainings about, you know, hey, how do you read the bills? What about these is important? Unfortunately, what's happening is when bills are introduced into a House to look at, the bills are being changed. They're getting torn apart from their original intent. And in Pennsylvania, there's a few things they had talked about eliminating some of the restrictions on probation. They had decided that they were going to allow people to use medical marijuana. And instead, this bill, by the time it made it out of committee, it maintained the status quo for probation sentencing. So it means that there is no limit on the total amount of time a person can spend under supervision. It can also just put in a judge's hands whether or not something like medical marijuana is acceptable. It also can put in additional periodic hearings and additional bureaucracy. And again, these are all little steps which might sound logical as you listen to them. But if you think about the interruption of someone's daily life, the stats show people can't make it work. And as a result, they get trapped in these systems. So in Pennsylvania, I'd call it, it's a death by a thousand cuts. Every single little change is destroying the intent of these bills. And it's creating a huge amount of work for everyone across the country, but especially right here in Pennsylvania, to do what it takes to get the job done, to put people first.
It's so hard, right? Because you hear this and it's like, how are people not acknowledging the elephant in the room? And I guess the elephant in the room in this case is that all these bills that are passed with the best of intentions. And actually, I'm thinking more, I'm getting a little more emotionally charged because I was, you know, looking at right now topically, it's the whole, you know, conservative argument to ban pornography. And, you know, yep. It's like, the cognitive dissonance, how do we not acknowledge the fact that, you know, we look at all the laws that government passes and the ineptitude of the government itself in trying to enforce these laws, but also the perversion of these laws to then be used against people and also against the intention of the law in the first place. You know, conservatives can seem to acknowledge that when you discuss welfare or, you know, healthcare. But then as soon as they start discussing something like, you know, putting a ban on pornography, it's like, oh, no, it'll be different this time. It'll be different. And I think they do the same thing for the war on drugs. You know, these laws were passed with, you know, the best of quote unquote intentions to, you know, help curb the usage of these, again, being considered dangerous substances. But I mean, the fact that people compare heroin, it was on the same, or not heroin, marijuana, it was on the same level as, I forget, it was like, you know, PCP or something like that. It's like, these aren't even the same thing, number one. But number two, the main point is that, you know, these laws are disproportionately hurting people, you know, especially minorities. But also the fact that they're not really changing anything for the better. They're completely subverted as it is. So, you know, instead what we're doing is we're just going to throw people into jail for, you know, basically their moral crimes from the perspective of why they're illegal in the first place. And it's insane to me that we can't have a rational conversation with some of the, you know, the detractors of criminal justice reform. It just seems like they don't want to see any progress for this. And I don't understand where that, you know, just common sense is lacking.
You're absolutely right. I mean, to take it one step further too, if you think about it in its most basic form, right? Number of people in jail, which, you know, that dismisses plea deals and people on probation and what that's looking at. But if you look at this, there's 2.3 million people in prison. And right now in America, it's estimated that between 2 and 10% of all convictions in the United States are made in error. That's a problem. So, yeah, you're right. There's something about where, you know, the road being paved with the best of intentions that doesn't leave a particularly positive picture. But at the end of the day, I think that's one of the reasons why it's a fight worth fighting. It's, if there's one thing that I could encourage your listeners to do, especially in the liberty community, is that because this is a bipartisan moment, this is a great time to get involved, to meet people, to learn from some of the best on the right and the left so that you can get those lessons. And, you know, regardless of how this fight ends up, think of all the education you'll have for the next fight where right. You're going to be defending liberty. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity to learn from both sides of the aisle and come out better for it in the fight for liberty.
And I think what you just mentioned is a very important thing for libertarians to listen to, is that you need to get outside of your echo chambers. You need to actually get off the internet and go and interact with your community. I mean, that's where we're going to be able to make the most difference. Interacting with real people in our real lives. And, you know, if you want to make a political impact, run for like a local office, like build credibility in your community. And then, you know, when you're elected to office, show the value of libertarian ideals and principles and how it's going to help affect people in a positive way. I mean, it sounds so easy because it is so easy. And it just takes you the actual decision to walk outside and interact with people, to introduce yourself to neighbors. I mean, it might be uncomfortable, but you don't have to go, you know, just handing everybody, you know, the road to serfdom. You don't have to do that. Like, just try and be involved in your community. And I think we'll actually see a more positive impact, just because at that moment, now we're actually being able to build these relationships and hopefully convince more people about, you know, the issues we care about. I mean, we're seeing that our ideas are winning. It just that more people need to hear them. And, you know, we're like I mentioned before, with gay marriage, the legalization of marijuana across, you know, how many states is it now? And you know, discussing like we just saw here with the First Up Act, we're making progress as a liberty movement. We just got to keep pushing forward. And honestly, you know, we have to start making sure that we get off the internet and just get into real life and interact with real people.
You're absolutely right. It's a snowball, and the snowball starts with shaking hands and kissing babies, right? It's a people business, making change in the world. You know, I'm a big advocate for community solutions and making things local. That's not going to do you any good if you don't know your neighbors, and the people down the street and the people at your city hall. You have an opportunity here with criminal justice reform to be all of that and more, because that snowball is only going to continue to grow, as those relationships continue to grow.
So if you were to give some suggestions to people who maybe are listening to today's episode and, you know, they themselves maybe have experienced, you know, how terrible really the criminal justice system is, or maybe they have loved ones that they have, you know, been through the criminal justice system, they feel that it desperately needs the reform that we're discussing. What are some ways that people can take action beyond just getting involved in their communities, but specifically focusing on the reform aspect for the criminal justice system?
Yeah, I think there's a number of organizations. The ACLU and Americans for Prosperity are two. What you'll also find is that in your state, there are a variety of different state-based organizations across the country that are fighting this fight based on what the laws are in each individual state. So don't be afraid to Google and just take a look at what's out there. I can tell you that there are some groups that are very friendly to newcomers, and there are some that are out there that aren't quite as interested in expanding the base with people who don't share every single one of their ideas. But I think what you need to remember at the end of the day, this is about our friends, it's about our family, and it's about making sure that our neighbors are taken care of. This is our community, right? Put a stake in the ground and make it yours. I wouldn't want my brothers or my kids tossed in jail and treated unfairly, locked into a probation system, especially over some bureaucratic technicality. It's real simple. Let's put people above politics.
It sounds simple because it is so simple. honestly, I think that's just the end of the discussion right there. But here, what I like to do when I have a guest on that discusses a topic like, you know, something as dark as criminal justice reform, because it is depressing, right? I mean, we're talking about millions of people who are incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. So, you know, the eternal optimist in me wants to see some good news. So, Connor, hopefully you have some good news for us. What do you think are the prospects of the reform movement here that seems to have been taking some speed and you know it's moving forward with the First Step Act? So, you know, does criminal justice reform look to be something that's going to be, you know, getting better and more so as we go forward, not only into 2020, but, you know, hopefully in a 2024, 2028 world?
I absolutely am seeing the silver lining, 100%. This is a moment in time where, for example, in Pennsylvania, this death by a thousand cuts on this very important bill, people are upset today. There's articles in the newspaper. There are people talking about it in the news. There are people, I work in the state capitol. That's where my office is. There are people talking about it there who are frustrated by the way this is being treated. That is an incredibly heartening situation in a world where oftentimes two sides of the aisle struggle to get along. I'm optimistic. I think it can be done. The most important thing is just going to be a continuation of voices putting pressure on lawmakers and people doing the right things in their communities to move the ball forward.
And you know what? I just to show that we're definitely in a simulation, like, not only would the first president be that would be pushing criminal justice reform, like truly pushing it and enacting legislation, not only that they are a Republican, but it's Donald Trump. Like,
right.
And how did he get it through? with the help of Kim Kardashian. And I'm just like, this has got to be a joke, right? Like I'm just waiting for us all to wake up collectively from one wild, like, dream.
What a time to be alive. Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic, but also kind of terrifying. But you know, I'm all here for it. So anyways, Connor, as we get ready to wrap up the show here, I think, you know, we're leaving on a positive note. So with that, what I'd want to do, number one, is have people be able to find the work that you're doing independently, on the side, and you're doing a lot of articles and such. So let's kind of turn the discussion towards more what you're doing, to help promote liberty on your own. And with that, where people can go ahead and find the work that you're doing, and hopefully give you some love and support.
Yeah, absolutely. The best place to find me is ConnorDrigotis.com, ConnorDrigotis.com. It's where I put all interviews and articles. And then other than that, social media, I am at CD Drigotis everywhere. So I'd love to connect with more people who care about liberty. And the more people we can get working on liberty full time, the happier I'll be.
I think the happier all of us will be. I mean, heck, look what Cliff Maloney Jr. is doing over there at Young Americans for Liberty with the Win at the Door campaign. I mean, that's what is showing it works. I mean, and that's, again, what we talked about earlier, getting out there and actually making a real difference in your communities. But anyways, with that, Connor, thank you so much for joining the show. It was an absolute pleasure, and I would definitely look forward to having you on again to discuss whatever the heck is going to be in the news in the future. You always seem to have a really good perspective on it. So, you know, we'll make sure this happens again.
Huge thank you. I'll look forward to it.
All right, folks. So that's going to wrap up my conversation about criminal justice reform with my good friend, Connor Drigotis. Now, guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, or if you learned something, you found some value in what we did here today, I'm going to ask you to please share with family and friends. And I know I ask this quite often, but this is truly one of those episodes that will have a really big impact in a lot of people's lives, because I can almost guarantee there are people in your life that would like look at this episode and say, yeah, you know what? Criminal justice reform is important to me because it's impacted someone I love, someone I know, you know, a coworker, or heck, even themselves personally. So if you guys could do that, I would appreciate it. And as always, guys, if you enjoy the content that I'm producing, please go over and give me some support on Twitter and on Facebook. You can go ahead and follow me at B Nichols Liberty on both sites. And as always, Apple Podcasts, guys, if you could just swing over there, give a quick rate and review. Again, it helps moves us up the charts and it helps us reach more people. And a topic like CJR, it's really important that we reach as many people as we possibly can. So make sure you guys finish up your holiday shopping. We're getting towards the end of the year. And as always, as you're going to and from your office Christmas parties or your family Christmas parties, holiday parties, please be safe, be smart, don't drink and drive. And more importantly, have a safe and happy holiday season. But don't worry, you'll be hearing me from a couple more episodes coming up here at the end of the year. So you can't get rid of me that easy, guys. But we're going to be hitting off 2020 with a bang. So just strap in, get ready to wrap out the year on a great note and start 2020 on an even better note here from The Brian Nichols Show. So signing off for Connor Drigotis. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Nichols Show. Find more episodes at BrianNicholsShow.com.